But first, the UK Independence Party, UKIP, wants the United Kingdom to withdraw from the European Union. That's not the official policy of any of the established political parties, but perhaps the voters have other ideas. UKIP made substantial gains in recent local elections, winning more than 140 seats and averaging a quarter of the vote in the wards where it was standing. As with any political battleground, numbers have been pressed into service as weapons. A key objection to staying in the EU is the cost. It's about £7 billion, according to the government's figures, or £150 billion, according to UKIP, who tot up the price of things such as extra paperwork for businesses, lost jobs, and what they call benefits tourism. Lord Lawson, most famous as the father of one of the country's most loved celebrity chefs, but who also apparently has some relevant employment experience, says the economic gains from leaving the EU would substantially outweigh the costs. Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg says 3 million jobs would be at risk if the UK left. So what are we to make of all of this? I've been speaking to Ian Begg, Professorial Research Fellow at the London School of Economics.
Well, the budgetary cost is, in principle, the simplest. And yet, even if you look at the budgetary cost, how much it costs the Chancellor of the Exchequer every year for us to be part of the European Union, even there are different ways of interpreting it. As an order of magnitude, it's an average of about £6 or £7 billion per year in net terms. And net terms in this context means that we pay in more, but we receive from it. So you look at the balance between the two, and that's the figure that comes out. But
off the top of my head, that is about £100 a person per year. Yes. Roughly. So that's one way of thinking about the cost of being part of the EU, which is effectively our membership fees, I suppose. But there must be many, many other potential costs and benefits. Has anybody tried to add them up?
Well, various people over the years have made attempts to measure the net cost to the UK or net benefit to the UK of being part of the European Union. My view on this is that it's a methodologically almost impossible task, because you have to make a huge range of assumptions, and each of your assumptions will tilt the final calculation one way or another. So it's no surprise that if you look at people who are pro-Europe, they tend to find a positive figure. Look at those who are anti-Europe, they will tend to find a negative figure. The reason for this is that you have to make assumptions about what would happen in the absence of being part of the European Union. So to take one example, we trade heavily with the European Union. Roughly half of British exports go to other EU countries. If these other countries were to impose some kind of barrier, then we would presumably export a bit less to them, and that would be bad news for the workers of Sunderland who make Nissan cars, or the workers of Derby who make Toyota cars. What we don't know is, in the absence of the EU, exactly what the trade regime would be. So you're making an assumption about what the alternative position is. And I could go on with example after example of this sort, which demonstrates just how difficult it is to arrive at a correct cost-benefit analysis.
Does this actually matter? Are there costs, but we just don't know what they are?
Well, there will be costs, because there are some things that grate in Britain. The famous working time directive tells the workers of Britain that they should not normally work more than a 48-hour week. But then, who is Britain in this context? The trade unions actually welcome that particular provision. The employers deplore it. The government rails against it. UKIP is on its high horse every time they hear about the working time directive. So different bits of Britain will interpret the same phenomenon in different ways about whether it's a good or a bad thing.
Now, Nick Clegg, the Deputy Prime Minister, staunch pro-European, is fond of saying that 3 million jobs are at risk if we left the European Union. Where does that number come from, and should we take that number seriously?
Well, I have to confess some responsibility for this number from having done some work as long ago as the year 2000 on this. And what I did as an attempted empirical exercise was to say, where do British exports go? And if you take the car industry as one example, perhaps 80% of the car industry's production is exported to other parts of the world. If within that 80, half goes to the European Union, that means that 40% of the car industry's output goes to the European Union. 40% of the car industry workers depend in some way on the European Union's demand. You might think that's a very simplistic way of doing it, but it's not that bad as a back-of-the-envelope form of calculation. It's a very different matter to say that if we left the European Union, all these jobs would go. Plainly, they wouldn't. There's no reason for a German consumer, were we to leave the European Union, no longer to buy a British car. they may over time face obstacles to buying that car because, let's say, the Germans impose a small tariff against Britain or make it more difficult to conform to the standards that are expected. In that case, you might see a gradual erosion of Britain's market share in Germany, and that gradual erosion would, in a limited way, jeopardise British jobs. But once again, you're in the world of assumptions. I think as an order of magnitude, the 3 to 3.5 million jobs is reasonable. Now, I'm sure somebody could dispute a particular element of my calculation, but it's not an unreasonable assumption. But the idea that these jobs will be lost is far-fetched.
Professor Ian Begg of the LSE's European Institute.